Hello, I'm Matthew Priddy, and this is episode 3 of the Refuel podcast with Historic Auctioneers.
In this episode, we'll look into Q1 auction results and peer into our crystal ball to better understand what this means for future values of your classic.
We will delve into the world of Ferrari and find out why 15 Ferrari have sold at auction for over £1 million already in the first 10 weeks of 2024.
And we'll give you the inside track onto Historic's next and first auction at Farnborough International Exhibition Centre in May. Now start your engines. Let's go.
Buying or selling a classic car? Head to historics.co.uk or click below for a free valuation.
On this episode, I have with me classic car specialist, the ever-opinionated Fraser Smith, and new boy, John Dutton. Now, guys, let's go straight into topic one. We are now, as we sit, mid-March. This will come out just towards the end of the month. So Q1 analysis of how the first quarter for classic and collectors has gone. Now, bear in mind, we've had two good auctions in a row, actually. We had a very good one in November and a very good sale, actually, a couple of weeks ago at Ascot. And obviously, I've been looking, as you guys will have done as well, at all the auction results and what sort of feelers we get from the market. So how do we think it sits as we go into sort of prime spring buying time?
I think after the last auction, it's definitely picking up. Like, we were super busy, sold most of the cars we had there, 3/4 of them. Prices were pretty good.
Well, we had record attendance as well for an Ascot sale in March, and it wasn't warm.
Yeah. Everyone kept saying, you know, they couldn't believe how busy it was. Yep. I found last year, quite often a car would be a couple of grand away from the reserve. We have plenty of buyers for them. It's just always a little bit of a gap, but now I think it's, you know, it's all closed up.
We've spoken a bit about this, about the adjustment. So through last year, we said this before, didn't we, about COVID was a big factor in this, in that everyone overspent for a little while and the market naturally was righting itself, but everyone didn't really want to take that advice. But by the end of last year, people started to realise values are values. But it's not across the board, you know. It can sound a bit dour. But if you think of some of the results that we had, so Resto Mods is a strange one. It's still holding up quite well, isn't it? We sold the Dino, which you consigned, and that's going to become a Resto Mod.
Yeah, quite interested to see what they do.
It was a reasonably strong price for a Dino that's then going to be cannibalised, I suppose.
Yeah, but like I said, I spoke with him, and if you're going to do it with a Dino, it's sort of, that was the one to do it with.
Well, you been can't converted really to buy a Dino under 200 anyways. It was a nice enough car.
It was lovely.
Yeah, £240,000 for a car you're going to start again with is quite impressive.
Yeah, yeah. But like I say, it obviously been converted to right-hand drive and not loads of paperwork, so it made sense. And the Viper Scepter you had sold for nearly 100 grand.
Look, I know they would have cost 150 plus to make that, but ultimately, an Interceptor, what's a standard Interceptor that's good, mate?
50.
So it's still £90,000 for an Interceptor, albeit with a Dodge Viper V10, which is probably £20,000 worth of value alone.
Yeah.
That's still an impressive price to sell and sell at auction. And you know this well, the JDM market is still astonishingly strong. It's certainly the one growth area that you pin your money on at the moment.
Yeah.
I'd brief look across other auctions. P1s are still very strong. Even if they're a very average car, they're making very good money.
It seems like at the minute, every time a nice one comes up, they start going a bit more. You know, that will obviously, it's got to stop eventually, but good news at the minute.
Yeah. I think that's driven, we spoke about this a little bit, about the sort of the rally and homologated cars, as well as cars with race links, because obviously a lot of those JDM cars went through the Subarus and the Mitsubishis, had close links to rallying, and we've seen a glut of the Tommy Mechanism, the special edition.
What you're seeing now is, I need to look into it really, but for America, a lot of them didn't go to America.
And they can open up after a time.
Yeah, and a lot of these, you know, Tommy Mechanisms and P1s, they're sort of 99, 2000. Mm-hmm. So it's probably not a bad thing to buy now and send it over there next year.
Right in the comments, I can't remember what the time difference is, but there's a certain time.
I think it's 25.
So they can start moving over. Yeah. I think same with things in Australia. 25-year-old classic can come in with less tax. So it makes sense if you have one that the market will open up.
They're probably worldwide. Yeah, I mean, it's probably quite a good bet for next year.
Two Tommy Mechanisms at our sale, the best one at 37. I did see some huge figures for really special ones.
Yeah, they're quite colour dependent.
And then even down to Honda NSXs, which I quite like Honda NSXs, but they've always been almost a bit sort of, the auto car is a bit sort of nice. Yeah. The manual cars are one to get, but there was a very nice, average mileage, well serviced, but nothing special. Green NSX we sold was £46,000.
Yeah, colour would have helped it, and it was, like I say, it was just nice. The mileage wasn't too high.
Now, I know, and I keep badgering this one fellow who's got an absolutely stunning low mileage. I mean, absolutely, still has the briefcase that some came with. And he, I don't think he'll ever, I think he'll have to chop his arm to get it. But I did say to him that if you can get a really standard car going at 46, a really low mileage manual car with all of the provenance, it's going to be really special soon.
Yeah.
It's never going to lose money either, really, is it, at that level? It's a usable supercar, practical to use.
And I think he must have bought it for 30, 40, I would imagine. I didn't ask.
Or less.
He's probably really sat there thinking, God, my word. And the sad thing is he probably doesn't want to drive it now because it's too special to him. Yeah. What about modern and Fords? I mean, the two markets, but they both had a real upswell over the last 18 months. So they still...
thing is, I think with the fast Fords, I've noticed like Mark II Escorts and Cortinas have probably dropped a bit, probably just the age of them. But Sierra Cosworths are good news. Escort Cosworths, I think, are probably the one, you know, they're the biggest one.
It's the 80s stuff now that's actually coming into its own.
And even the 90s, Escort Cosworths. And, you know, I think Sierra's sort of 4 years ago went mad and they kept going. But
the RS500s are still really strong, but the standard ones maybe... starting to drift back a little bit.
Yeah.
The four-wheel drive and the saloons, the what they call
Sapphires.
Them?
Sapphire.
They never really quite clicked in the same way at all.
It's quite a lot of them. That's why.
Yeah.
And they're not as exciting to look at, are they? That was the thing.
I was called McDonald's car park cars, and the rear-wheel drive just used to go round and round in circles in the McDonald's car parks when I was a kid. So they're still reasonable. I mean, yes, the RS500, seen a couple of them sold really strong. It still seems to be an obsession with mileage.
Yeah, and unmodified.
And originality is the key, isn't it, with those? A lot of cars did get modified for track days racing, but when they were cheaper, and now finding those straight original cars is really difficult.
Well, we said before, it's production numbers, isn't it? And you're quite right with things like the Sapphire. Ultimately, if there's lots of them made, then the only one that's going to be special is either going to be one owner or very, very low mileage. And, and that's the problem, is as we make cars in greater numbers... there needs to be something to find something that makes it special if you want to remember it, of course. It does mean, though, that a lot of cars are more affordable. And if you're selling a car that's a bit average, then you might have a trouble. Mm. But equally, if you're a buyer and you're not chasing after the absolute pinnacle, but you want something that you grew up with, it is a very good time to buy. And the more people buy, the more it actually will lift the marketplace. And that's what we have seen over the last 4 or 5 months is... as people have corrected their values, that then has stimulated more people to buy, which has then sort of propped it and solidified it a little bit, much like the property market.
And I think I had this conversation with a customer sort of for our last auction. He'd bought a car sort of during COVID, paid quite strong money, and it's just not worth it anymore. But he was looking to replace it with something else. And we sort of spoke and he agreed that it might take a bit of a hit on the car he's selling.
Yeah,
but if you're buying something else at, you know, a lower value,
relative.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's like houses, isn't it? You know, you're buying and selling in the same market, you're no worse off.
Yeah. Your only first big hit is the first house you buy, really, isn't it? That's when you've got to get onto the market.
Well, the Audi Quattro we had, when I went to see the guy and we spoke about the reserve, I thought, you know, a bit strong, but it's a really nice original car.
Really lovely car.
It was lovely. Yeah, and everyone that came to see it, you know, they all said the same thing. They'd been looking for one. They'd looked at 5 or 10 of them. They were all high mileage and quite rough. And because this one wasn't, and I don't think it'd ever been painted and all, you know, it made 10 or 12 grand above the reserve,
We drove that in the Driving in Cars series, and it looked nice. And you do get a feel for it, especially in 80s. You drive it, it was just right.
It even had
a non-standard exhaust, but the non-standard exhaust it had was almost perfect because it gave enough noise without being really overdrony, horrible exhaust.
Yeah.
It was a really lovely example of that. And proof that if you still have something really nice...
Yeah. Quality.
Quality still does make...
So with that car, after I had been to see the customer and came back to the office, I was sort of... You always get a feeling whether you know it's going to sell or you're not sure. I wasn't that sure, to be honest, because it was quite strong money.
It generated a lot of interest, though, didn't it, that car?
Loads,
yeah. Yeah, the people all over it, all week.
There's always people that will pay the money if they know there's not another one they can just go and get tomorrow.
In fact, you're right, there isn't. You do need to put one back together again now.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
And can you get it done for a sensible amount of money? The answer is just generally no.
Yeah.
The one that really surprised me, having sort of discussed the big old girls, you know, the big Rolls-Royce Bentleys, 60s, 70s, 80s, all the way through, thinking, oh, they really are struggling. Mm. And that Bentley Continental...
Amazing.
I mean, doubled what we expected.
Yeah, absolutely incredible.
And I mean, maybe we're a little bit cautious because we have been with clients. But that was absolutely incredible. The price all up was £165,000, nearly double what we expected.
Yeah. Which, to be fair, I think, especially with cars like that, if you do buy one for 40 grand that needs a load of tidying up, you could spend that pretty quickly if you want to make it that nice.
Rolls-Royce and Bentley, at that era, they're not cheap to maintain. Exactly. And you need to maintain them properly. But that's still, and that will prop up a fair bit of people's confidence in what was...
Yeah, it was a great colour combination as well, that car. Yeah. You know, if you want one of those, it was as good a combination as you're likely to get. And a really nice car. Obviously, two people particularly wanted it and drove the price up. But it gives us a lot of confidence.
It was probably exactly to do with auctions, really. I mean, it's exactly that, because ultimately, we'd set that expectation. I'm sure the customer would have maybe wanted more, but let's say to put that on the market at 100, 120, where no one comes along and offers you more money.
No. So and it proved the theory and you sort of played the game.
Yeah, played the game, made the money and done very, very well. And proves that there are still buyers for that.
That kind of
60s, 70s, 80s Rolls-Royce, Bentley. As long as, you're quite right on colour though. I think it makes a big difference.
Yeah.
You do want to, in your mind, you've got something, wafting along to the south of France, as they say.
Yeah.
So, generally speaking, I'd say much more enthusiast-driven market at the moment.
I think people are suddenly, I think the market is picking up. You know, there's been a bit of a lull, but things are picking up. And, as we said, head into the right time of year, the weather and people start feeling a bit better about things, interest rates, etc. I think it's a buoyant market, a good time to buy.
Well, last night was a speech from Rishi Sunak about, obviously putting more money into people's homes. Now, it's relative, because equally everything else is still going up. But there is a slight feel-good, as you say, spring, and naturally, and we've said this over the last 12 months, government are going to start to stimulate and want everything to seem very, very warm and fuzzy approaching an election. So that feel good will filter into where people are and what money's in their pockets, should I say.
Yeah.
So I think probably on a good... The low end is definitely moving fine. And that's because people that are selling, I think, have to sell, and they're not a great deal of money to buy, and there is always a buyer.
Yeah.
So I think at the low end, sub £30,000, I don't think really there's too much to be concerned with. Your car's worth what it's worth, and they generally are buyers.
Yeah.
The top end, these guys are pretty much resistant to finances, so we're still seeing huge numbers.
Yeah. But people are still, I think, like you say, over in the States and Middle East, place in Dubai, there's a few big auctions and there's always people who are willing to spend a lot of money on cars. But I think the fact that they are probably, it does all filter down, because people who can go and spend 10 million quid on a car, they're still... they didn't get that by throwing their money away. So they're still
cautious. And they're not worried about their heating bill going up or the price of, I don't know, bananas at Sainsbury's, are they?
But it's sort of all, I think from the top, it filters down, I think.
It's that middle part where, actually, in fairness, we operate relatively well. I think that's where we've had to explain to clients where they're at. And also, if they've got a particularly special car, they'll be fine.
Yeah.
And in between, you've just got to read the market. It's still a good time to buy per se, because if you're buying now, you would assume that the market should only get stronger.
Yeah, I think in the sort of £30,000 to £70,000 bracket, you're very unlikely to lose a lot of money.
No.
And you can buy something that's fun, enjoyable to use.
Yeah.
Whether you keep it for a year or for 10 years, ultimately it's a pretty safe bet.
Yeah. And buy for fun rather than
Absolutely. Always buy something you want.
Yeah.
To enjoy and drive and use, and if it goes up, then great,
fantastic.
Yeah, and if you don't get your money back, it's not such a hard pill to swallow.
It's like going on holiday, isn't it? You're spending money on holiday, you don't have anything to show for it at the end of it. But if you've had a great time, it was worth it.
I don't know. You did ask us to do a slideshow, we declined. On that point, we're talking about those posh cars over in America. Concours or Concours?
Concours.
Concours and Concours. You like to go posh with a bit of French accent, do you?
Yeah.
You should be careful how you spell it. It's not a walkway, that's the key factor, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not Concours. No, definitely not.
There's been a few that have come a cropper on that on descriptions. Mm. But no.
I've seen your spelling, Matt.
There's a reason for proof checking. Right, okay. So with that market analysis gone, I set you some homework, didn't I?
Mm-hmm.
Because there seems to be such an upswell on Ferrari at the moment. Ferrari, banging it, ramming it in the face. I mean, lots of it driven by Ferrari themselves. But obviously, capturing Lewis for the Formula One team makes a big difference.
Thing.
That's obviously made a big story. The launch of their first shopping trolley car is sort of somehow turned into a positive spin, which I didn't expect. Mm. But also, there's been a glut of very good sales for Ferraris. Now, bear in mind, Ferrari is always the pinnacle, really, of where collector cars
tends
can
to
be.
Yeah.
First of all, let's say, what's your favourite Ferrari? See where they land.
Tricky.
Go on, Fraser, what's yours?
As we spoke about earlier, I mean, I could go on, there's probably 50 you could pick. But there's one I saw, and I've never seen one in person, but it's called a 400 Super America short wheelbase coupe aerodynamica. A bit of a mouthful.
We had to look something, because
I love it.
Where is it? Here it is. Yes. That's what you...
You see, the one I'm a big fan of, it's got covered headlights, a bit different. Yeah. But you know, same sort of thing. I just think it looks lovely.
And what sort of value is that?
I mean, the last couple that have been put into auction haven't sold, but they've been estimated around $3 million. The last one that actually sold, I think that's that blue one, sold for about $3 million, but, you know, going back 7-8 years ago. So,
pretty. I wasn't sure about the back of it.
I like that
sloped back. I wasn't sure.
I like that.
They're blue chip, though, aren't they? Those, you know, especially those special build individual cars.
Yeah, and there's only, I think, I mean, it's never really that many exact build numbers, but I think there's only 30 of them, something like that.
And everyone will be individual as well. They'll all have little nuances that are different.
I just thought it's quite, something a bit different.
Well, see, I've got something that no one else would normally pick, actually, and it's because we used to have one here. We had it for a fair amount of time, and I drove it around loads. It's that sort of slanted look for me, and it was 365 GT4 BB, which was
nice.
Not necessarily seen as sort of one of the prettiest, more collectible cars, but I loved it because it was a bit of a brute.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but I think it was that sort of the old Lamborghinis and Ferraris of that era. I remember a scene in Rocky, the movie, I think it was, where he goes out and drives, and it was probably a Lamborghini. And it's just these, when they were incredibly difficult to drive, not particularly practical, lots of slanted pop-up headlights.
I think it was a Lamborghini Jalpa, actually, if I remember rightly.
And for some reason, that just encapsulates sort of what I remember from my childhood. And when this was here, and everyone was sort of dancing around, and, oh, I don't want to drive, I actually really loved it. It was horrible, really. I had to warm it up. They had to treat it really aggressively. Yeah. Not much like I think you'd think of as a Ferrari. Less
it sort of takes you for a drive, doesn't it?
Yeah, but I actually really liked it. I liked the aggressive nature of it. I think the picture of the actual car itself. That was the car we had.
That's the colour I'd have. Yeah, I'm controversially, I just don't like red. I'd have to have a blue one. Yeah.
I think red works in certain cars on Ferraris, and you'd probably agree with this.
Matt was about to say that I spent a lot of time with Ferrari, and red was always a bestseller, but the bigger Ferraris we always struggled with in red. So the blues, and actually now dark green, Verdi Zellweger, great
very
colour.
Very popular, isn't it? I think that's the thing, is that the small, dainty race cars look fabulous in red. You get slightly bigger, you're almost a bit... Look at me, which I suppose you are if you buy a Ferrari.
And they all look better in blue, to me.
I mean, I used to love blue. Yeah. Blue Potsy, which is one of the traditional, is a solid, non-metallic blue. As long as it's looked after, looks amazing.
Yeah.
And it's rarer. I mean, red is a bit in your face, whereas Lamborghinis always did better with the larrier, louder colours because that was the nature of the beast. But
yes.
And as I say, red did always sell with Ferraris, but it was on the smaller, the 355s, 360s.
Yeah.
430s, and even today, that's still the case. But the Lusos, the bigger cars, red is a no-no, really.
So what would you pick? What would be your money-no-object?
Money-no-object would be a 250 GT short wheelbase, which is slightly predictable, but just a gorgeous car.
Now there's the back that I can get on with. See, it's got a nicer backside, that one, than yours, I think.
Yeah. And I think nicer than a GTO, controversially.
I wouldn't turn one down.
But obviously that's money, no object. But I like some of those more analog Ferraris. I mean, the modern Ferraris now are so fast and capable, but actually you're just a passenger in a technological, whereas a classic Ferrari where you actually got to drive the open gated gearbox, it's a much more involving, and it's not about how fast it is. It's about how much enjoyment and driver input there is.
That's what I liked about my choice, is it was a genuine drive.
Yeah. There's one that was sold recently. It's a 348 Competizione, which is, 348, most people just aren't that interested. But I think they only made about 50 of them.
The Competizione was less than that. It was super rare.
It's really rare. Yeah. All individually numbered. They got, seats out of an F40. I think it took something like 200 kilos out of them, which is a lot. And, that'd be great. If you had a lineup of all the best ones.
I mean, went for a lot of money, that car.
Yeah, it was 200 grand or something.
Yeah, I think it was getting on for that. Yeah,
it's a lot for a 348.
Tell us why you know so much about Ferrari.
Well, I was the Ferrari buyer for a well-known local Ferrari, well, part of a big group, for 16 years as the used car buyer for Ferrari. So, yeah, I've had quite a few through my hands over that period of time.
A few Ferraris.
Yeah, just a few. A few that, in hindsight, should have bought, tucked away.
Always but, the case, yeah. So you must have seen a few, you thinking, oh, that's the value now. And they go, oh, my word, what's that gone for?
I mean, it's interesting. I mean, there were some which you go, gosh, that was ridiculously cheap. And then others, and then they went through the roof and then have come back down. So, I mean, 550s were relatively inexpensive and then went through the roof and they've come back down to probably a more realistic...
They've been like that for years.
Yeah, and they're now at a more realistic level. Yeah. But they're still, you know, a 550 as a modern classic. It's a modern Daytona, isn't it? You know, it's two-seater, Berlinetta, manual gearbox, V12.
Yeah.
You know, all the ingredients going back to the Daytonas, 275s, etc.
I think with Ferraris, it's always that case that the people buy them more with that sort of future value in mind than any other car, and maybe Porsche, because people are obsessed about money with Porsche. But there is always that predetermined thought process. And even from new, they're worrying about values when they come to sell it. Yeah. It's all about the money. And the irony is, of course, that the top cars are bought by people where money is really not much of an object.
Yeah.
Everyone below them is obsessing about the values, whereas the guys with the real sort of pinnacles, the ones that are future-proof, bomb-proof.
Well, the ones that you get specially selected where you've got a massive profile with buying Ferrari product, and you get selected to buy these, you know, cars, which effectively, when you do sell, you're not supposed to sell them within a period of time, but, you know, can almost double your money.
Just quite interesting. I love F12 TDFs, which a lot of people don't, but I always look at them on, I've got a search saved on AutoTrader, just in case.
Yeah. Just in case one day you win.
Never know, yeah. And there's usually five or six for sale, but these, you know, they're sort of 5-6 years old now, and it's very rare you see any with more than 1,000 miles on. You know, there's 6 years old.
Yeah, but also, you know, interestingly, Fraser, if you drive a normal F12, it's an incredible car for a quarter of the price.
Yeah, 20%. Yeah,
price, probably less than that. Yeah. And actually, it's probably nicer on the road, less valuable, more usable. You know, why? It's always the way with these rare... It was the same with Scuderias, 16Ms.
I'll tell you why this happens. Since the turn of the year, we're sat now... mid-March, so 10 weeks. In the last 10 weeks, there has been 15 Ferraris sold in excess of £1 million at classic and collector car auctions.
Yeah.
I mean, to give you a few highlights, we've had, not surprising, so we've had a 250 GT short wheelbase of California. 17. That was nearly $18 million.
Yeah.
Ferrari F40, they've been in the news, so they've been climbing up and up and up, $3.36 million. Enzo, just shy of $4 million. Two Ferrari 365 GTB... for Daytonas, both around £3.5 million.
Yeah. Spiders, were they?
Yep. I mean, it's not surprising when they can achieve those results that people...
It all trickles down to the 100 gram ones, doesn't it?
Talking about ones that got away in my early career with Ferrari, I walked away from an F40 for £200,000.
But we've spoken about F40 because Countach's were the same. We've seen them happen on our watch, let's say. Mm. And you do sit there and think, oh my word, you know, those that held, I knew a client of mine who had an F40 and F50, which both sold. He made money on them, but they sold before the big kick. We know lots of people with DB5s, when they were nothing, and then they jumped to £500,000.
Yeah. There's a story of a chap that was a salesman at a Ford dealership in the 80s, and they had this Sierra, which they couldn't get rid of. It was 10 grand. They couldn't get rid of the thing. And he took a DB5 in as a part exchange on this Sierra. So he was the hero because he'd got rid of this piece of stock they just couldn't shift. I think they then sold the DB5 for like 11 grand or 12.
Yeah, traded it out.
Made a bit of money. He was the top boy for a while. But I mean, that puts that into perspective, doesn't it?
There's three or four people on that chain going, bugger.
Yeah. Like it was just a...
But we said before, you know, if it's a long time ago, it's relative. You can't really sit on that. But houses, properties are the same. We talked to lots of clients who made fortunes on property just because they were alive and had property in that.
I've missed that boat.
But ultimately, it's only when you get very lucky and you get a car that you've owned for maybe 3-4 years as a...
Yeah.
Then you've got a sort of... You can understand that people think and they're trying to find that little nugget, which we know isn't really easy to find. Otherwise, we wouldn't be sat here. We said a million times we'd all be on yachts and just buying and selling stuff. Mm. The reason why we come down to this as well and a bit of homework is that the Ferrari movie, which I wasn't aware of until you spoke to me about it. So I went home and watched it, all about Enzo Ferrari. It's the two actors, actually the actor in it that plays Enzo, which is Adam Driver.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have picked him for Enzo Ferrari. I don't know why, but he was very good in it, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, facially very... He didn't put on... He was criticised in some aspects. He didn't put on the weight, so he wasn't as physically... big as Enzo, but I think his portrayal was very good and very accurate.
It was very
and of course Penelope Cruz was amazing.
Oh, she was very. I mean, not the Penelope Cruz you normally used to associate to seeing, but she was very good in it. And it was actually very informative to see something that was more biographical about him. Not I mean, obviously talks about Ferrari and the race team and it being Emilia and how in the same way that Ford were trying to win Le Mans, it was that win the race. On Saturday or Sunday, and then sell the cars on Monday.
Yeah,
but it was very much about his personal relationship. And what did you say he was? What did you reference?
Enzo Ferrari. I think we'll leave that one.
It was a bit of a womanizer, let's say.
I mean, I wasn't.
Fraser's famously not a movie buff. I mean, we tease him in the office. Have you seen this? No. Have you seen no?
No. I mean, I preferred Le Mans '66. More about the cars. Maybe I can just relate. You know, I just know the story a bit better.
But Le Mans 60 was very much more Hollywood, wasn't it? I think the Ferrari.
Yeah,
it was more about the racing and the cars and, you know.
Hollywood always changed stories slightly. If you knew nothing about cars, you would think that the Fords were all built in America, where actually they were built up the road in Slough. But is it Le Mans 66 for Ford Ferrari is a great film. I think it won Oscars, actually.
Yeah.
The Ferrari thing is more, it's a very much a people, it's about his relationship with his wife, the business, the drivers. I mean, they referenced it in the film, but when Castellotti was killed in testing, trying to break the lap record, first he said, oh no, Castellotti in Moore, he's dead. And the next thing he said is la macchina, the car. He was more worried about the car than he was the driver.
That's the thing with him. I mean,
he was very single-minded.
Yeah, and I was reading the thing, but a couple of his friends died on the same day in a car that he effectively built.
It changed his mindset.
And it's sort of fight or flight, and he's there to win. And in some ways, it's almost like the drivers were all sort of disposable.
Really. It comes across well in the movie, idea of, you know, and back then racing was incredibly dangerous. And
it's different, different ball game altogether.
There were some great quotes in it as well, though. I like the one that was
Jaguar.
Yeah, Jaguar races only to sell cars. I sell cars only to be racing, which is so true of the time. But I'm pretty certain not true of now.
No.
I think now you'd say there are probably a few in Ferrari and Maranello, in Modena, that still think that way. But generally speaking, it's not the case.
I think Ferrari, you know, their road cars, they still relate, or the success, you know, people still associate that. Whereas if you go and buy a new A-class Mercedes, you're not relating to a...
But interestingly, I think the AMG model was grown of that Ferrari ideal, wasn't it? Because we had, for years, rally and race, whereby someone would enter a car, they would win a race and it would sell cars, and then there would be the top end versions of a car, let's say, that wouldn't really make any profit, but it would then trickle down to sell other models. And I think when Mercedes AMG came back into it, they very much looked at the Ferrari model and said, well, Ferrari are still selling cars based on motor racing. Bring that, we might be able to sell more of our cars on the basis of Mercedes going around the track. It's a different philosophy.
I mean, if you go back to the 70s, we were talking about fast forwards earlier, we're talking like Mark Well Escort Mexicos and RS2000s and what have you, and they did race series, and they would be racing them on the Sunday at Brands Hatch and then selling them in the
and
showrooms
on Monday. And you
could go and
buy something
very similar. Yeah,
exactly. The problem now, I think, for years, Ferrari and F1 has been pretty poor.
But
if you follow a lot of motorsport, in GT racing and sort of Le Mans, WEC, the endurance racing, they're still
there.
Yeah, they still know what they're doing. But a lot of people obviously follow F1. I think there's a risk of people who are children now who aren't seeing Ferrari win every week.
Maybe
will it be held as highly in 20 years to some of the younger people?
Nowadays it's all TikTok and YouTube videos engaging with the Ferrari owners, but we'll see. Right? Yeah. Well, then let's see how they get on with Hamilton. Interesting, in that movie, we were just looking through, we were saying earlier, wasn't there? There was only one real car that was used in that movie. Everything else was very much sort of movie leather wizardry and
I read a bit about this actually. They spent a lot of attention and money making the cars look correct in the sort of action scenes. Where and the only car that you see in action that was a real car in testing was the 250F, the Nick Mason car with Marino driving it, I think.
That's it. Otherwise, everything was as you see it. But some of the
but the attention to detail, they really was very. Yeah. Very, very
I read
accurate.
That, and I didn't realise, but I read there's a when he's in a barber shop having his haircut. It's the barber shop that Enzo actually had his hair cut in, and the guy cutting his hair is Enzo's barber's son.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And
there's also in the Mealy Melia scene. There's a bit where before he goes to the accident. And hands, well, I think it's Peter Collins, he hands back his drink or his banana, isn't it?
Yep.
And there's a mechanic who he hands the banana back to. It was actually a works Ferrari mechanic in the 80s, in the times of Villeneuve Peroni. They've used him in the film.
Great.
So it's a nice little.
It's a very good step in history, a bit of a learning curve in some Ferrari. It's quite good to watch if you're a bit of a Ferrari enthusiast, but you're not so au fait with. The history of Ferrari, it's well worth a watch.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely. Right, so now we've got an auction upcoming, of course, which we should speak about, because as this goes out, we'll probably have not a great bit of time, but a bit of time still to consign cars. So if you are interested in consigning cars, what you should definitely do is get in contact, call the numbers on the website, have a look at our email addresses. The guys here will do a free, no obligation valuation for you. Now, at the time of standing, there are about 20 cars on the website. By the time this goes out, we'll probably be damn near 130. They'll all be on the website themselves. Anything that you've got consigned or upcoming that you could speak of note?
There's a Jaguar XK150, yep. Which is a left-hand drive coupe, but it's black with red. It's always been those colours. It's really nice, actually. It's been in a barn for 12 years, 15 years.
Yeah.
It's brought it back from France, cleaned it, which some people wouldn't agree with, but it's so good, and the paint's actually really good that I think it's the right thing to do. And he's been right through it and made sure it's just on the button, everything. It's a nice car. There's no reserve.
No reserve, nice.
Absolutely, yeah, no reserve.
Well, that's worked really well for clients as of late.
Yeah, he'll do well with that. You know, it's probably worth sort of in the 40 grand region.
Okay,
other ones, a Porsche 964, just one everyone wants really at the minute. It's Carrera 2, Cabriolet, been owned for 15 years, all the money, 40 grand's worth of bills. And that's sort of in at, around 30, 35 region. Yeah.
John, anything up on your radar?
Well, funnily enough, another Jaguar, but a slightly earlier 120 drop head, but with really lovely condition, had a lot of money spent on it, but with some concessions to modern day driving, so a really usable car. So five-speed Guidebroad gearbox, electronic ignition, disc brakes on the front, but looks
well
absolutely
worth it.
Standard, beautiful. Yeah. Drop head, actually more usable as a practical classic because the hood actually works.
Yeah.
A really nice car.
And you should know a bit about these, shouldn't you?
I know a bit about them, yeah.
Having
one
yourself.
I do, yeah.
So yeah, please go on the website, have a good look at that. And if you do want to contact us regarding putting your car into auction or have a look at what we've got so we can get you at the next sale, it's at Farnborough International Exhibition Centre.
Yep.
Everything indoors, purpose-built space. Still very close to London, M25 and all routes, so actually should be a really good
looking
venue.
Looking forward to it, actually. Yeah, should be, because some place we go to, it's quite a mission getting everything in place. It takes a lot of people, but it looks like we'll be able to set it up nice and easily.
And be
nice
and easily. Come to view it as well. No worries about parking or whether it's going to rain. It's all going to be nice.
Should be hassle-free.
Well, that's hope. It's May, so it's a good time to sell, so that'll be interesting. Right, with all that done, should we have a bit of fun?
We can try.
Right, so what I've got. So I've got a piece of paper here, and since we've been talking about Ferraris, I'm going to give you just 30 seconds to draw a Ferrari, and your co-hosts have to guess what that Ferrari is.
Okay.
So, tip, don't make it too difficult.
We've got something to lean on.
You just make a bit of space.
It's not going to make much difference.
Anyway, so 30 seconds, wait a moment, because I'm going to get the timer out. I'm not going to let you just speed away and cheat.
Right. I didn't do art in school or college, so.
Right, if I do a timer, so countdowns for 30 seconds. Ready for it? 30 seconds, no cheating.
30?
No writing the actual model on it. We're off, go. I've done a really
better one.
I haven't got my glasses on.
Oh, we've not got long. 4, 3, 2, 1. That's it. Time up, everybody. Okay, this is gonna be interesting.
It looked a lot.
That's an F40.
It's an F40.
It's not actually.
What?
It's not. He's trying to be clever. It's an F50.
So you've got no one to guess yours because you went clever with an F50, but it was reasonably.
This is meant to be the. Yeah. Windscreen. Yeah.
Okay, so on mine, I started and then very quickly realised where the hell am I going with this?
Been through the crusher, hasn't it?
Which is the front?
I'm allowed to say front and back. I've started to put the lights in just to try and help people guess what on earth it is.
Is it a 355?
No.
360?
Yes, 360. Yes, I got a point.
I was looking at the rear lights.
I was trying to figure out how to do that centre door bit. So I've got
got what you meant here. Sort of some flat
mine
headlights.
Was drawn by a 5-year-old. Right. But hopefully there's a clue in the middle there.
Oh, what? Ferrari Testarossa.
There you go.
Oh, Testarossa? Yeah, because it got the slats.
The back section caught me.
Oh, sorry about
that. I was going to say FF.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to frame these and put these on the wall.
Terrible.
And see if we can get any better.
Mine looks like a shoe, doesn't it?
It does look a bit like a shoe, yes.
Yeah. Yours was in the wacky races.
Yeah, actually. I'll stick to cars.
Thank God you guys are in car specialists and not in art. So, right. Okay, time to wrap this up and thank everyone for watching. As I said, the upcoming auction is on the 11th of May at Farber International. There is time to consign, so click in the link below for a free valuation form. It's no obligation. We just like to tell you how much your cars are worth. Obviously, do get in contact with us and follow us on the social medias. If you're watching us on YouTube, do click the bell icon so you get reminders of everything we post, because of course soon we'll be driving in cars with Vicky and Tom. That's always good fun to watch. Myself, Vicky and Tom will also be at the next auction. If you want to come along, please do. You can meet us, come and throw some abuse at us, of course, which is always great fun. And follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and any other way that you can possibly find us. Most of the news and upcoming consignments do hit there first, so it's well worth a watch. So for now, it's goodbye from me, goodbye from Fraser, and goodbye from John. Thank you for watching.